Okay, thanks a lot for the invitation to talk this very interesting conference. I'll talk about a couple of works written last year with John Donahue and some work in progress. And while it will be a big switch of gears, completely different topic, but actually one of my probably most ambitious goals would be to convince you that even though apparently there are no black holes in this picture and in the subject of this talk, but actually there are black holes in the story and kind of maybe approached from somewhat different directions. So let me start with some motivation supporting this. So probably one of the most surprising and interesting lessons from ADS-CFT is that we can use conventional gauge theory to talk about quantum gravity. And in the standard, usually it's in quantum gravity in high dimensions. And the focus of this talk is another aspect of this gauge gravity relation, but I believe it's not unrelated. Namely, well, confinement. If you have confining gauge theory, it gives rise to obvious low dimensional dynamical geometric object, which is a flux tube connecting two colored sources. Of course, well, that may sound as too cheap, so one may ask, well, okay, you got an object, but why this object is more interesting than like the laces on my sneakers or spaghetti? The answer to this question was given by Toft back in early 70s. Then when we take Toft limit, then the way it was phrased back then is that diagrammatic expansion in gauge theory turns into diagrammatic expansion of string theory, but closer to what I was talking about, but it's related to that. So if you take a confining string and if you make it self-intersects, the probability of this object to break goes like 1 over nc squared. So if we really take strict planar limit, if we take nc to infinity, then we end up with a truly microscopic dynamical object, one-dimensional dynamical object. So kind of this picture may be summarized, then it has Toft limit, confining strings, and at least seen as a two-dimensional geometrical object, they're as fundamental as critical strings. Well, and actually, at the end of the day, we do expect that the full interacting gauge theory will be described, in the confining case, will be described by some high-dimensional holographic geometry, probably very strongly curved. So in that sense, I think there actually, I don't need this at least. I would argue that confining strings are as fundamental as critical strings, in the sense that they give rise to dynamical geometry, not only on the world sheet, but also in the target space at the end of the day. Topic of this talk would be to really work in the strict planar limit and to understand how world sheet geometry arises from gauge theory. Let me say that the confining strings are not only as fundamental as critical strings, but moreover, they are, well, in some sense, more interesting or more complex. And the reason for that can be seen already by studying low energy dynamics of confining strings. So if you are effective field theorist and you take a long confining flux tube, then you think about it as a theory of Goldstone bosons, and the scattering amplitudes on the flux tube at low energies, they're universal, you can calculate them using low energy expansion. And if you do that you find, well, first of all, that the theory, because it's not trivial, there is some, you take Nambu-Goto action, you calculate three-level scattering, you find that there are non-trivial amplitudes. But at the three-level, the theory is integrable. However, when you go to one loop order, you find that there is particle production. So, and that's the difference with critical strings. On the world sheet of critical strings, you don't find there because this d would be equal to 26. Since here I'm talking about d, like, let's put it 4. There is universal particle production on the world sheet. So it's not only the confining flux tubes give to us not only dynamical geometric object, but also it's kind of it's complicated object. It's non-integrable object, and that's the reason why it's proven so hard to solve large NQCD in the confining case, because we intrinsically, even when you take strict planar limit, you still left with interacting non-integrable two-dimensional system, and that's the obstacle really to fully solve this theory. Let me also say, well, this number which appears here, if you do algebra, you find that it's equal 11 over 12 pi, and that number appeared in some other context. Some people in this room got Nobel Prize for calculating this number for us. At the moment, it looks like a piece of numerology, but I think really understanding why one loop beta function coefficient, how it went into leading particle production on the wall sheet, I think when we understand that, that will be a big step towards understanding confining strings. Yes, Eva. Yeah, but here I'm not talking, that's a different path in some sense to critical strings. Here I'm talking QCD strings. And when I take long strings, there is the difference with linear Dilaton case is there are no extra massless modes on the world sheet. And then there is nothing which can cancel this particle production. So this linear Dilaton, it's kind of in the language I'm using, would be extra massless scalar mode present on the world sheet. And it allows still get an integrable theory. While if you really talk about like confining strings, then there are, we know from lattice data, from. Yeah, well, really critical. I think it's critical. It's more or less the same as integrable wall sheet dynamics. So I think that's what. Well, usually it's phrased different way, but at least in the context in which I'm talking about, that's the understanding. Right. Yeah. I don't need necessarily mean d equal 26, but. But also, I was really here comparing to the simplest case. Like, for the this comparison can be taken critical. Okay, so, so it's complicated theory, but on the other hand, it's strongly coupled in the UV. And there are many reasons to expect that this microscopic theory is a theory of 2D quantum gravity rather than quantum field theory. And that will be the topic of this talk, to try to understand really what happens in the UV of this theory. Which usually, well, that's the interesting part. It's not integrable, but I think the best hope to understand UV behavior is to find a closed by integrable model and perturb around it. Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying here, right? So usually it's hard, but in this particular case of dynamical geometry, we know what kind of the atoms of this two-dimensional space-time, using stiff terminology, is the quarks and gluons of perturbative QCD. And I think that's one of the reasons I think it's not coincidental that kind of this number appears here, because this physics here is related to perturbative QCD. Well, here I'm talking about UV on the wall sheet. Really, I took strict planar limit. So in that sense, it's free string theory. I'm talking about wall sheet dynamics. But that wall sheet dynamics is not free and not integrable. And now I do high energy scattering. So I first took large N limit. But now I'm interested in large energy limit. So I want to study high energy scattering on the single long string. And that's what I mean by the UV.
Just clarify, we don't think like a Calabi out in critical circuit. That's not integrable. What seems like different in your case,
well,
is the interactions on the world sheet grow with energy.
Well, actually, we can talk with Calabi out. It's a bit harder because, well, it's interacting CFT. But if you take world sheet theory, it's like standard Calabi out quantification. What you will get world sheet theory of long string will be TT bar deformation of the CFT, which is a product of four-dimensional flat space and this Calabi out. And so in that sense, it's an integrable because TT bar deformation is integrable. So leaving aside the question, what does it mean for CFT being integrable? But kind of the gravitational dynamics, which comes from TT bar deformation, gravitational part of the dynamics is integrable there. And here I'm really interested in gravitational part.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, thanks. So my goal would be to kind of try to take this insight and push it as far as possible. So because we know what is underlying degrees of freedom in the UV, as Daniel said. And they did. So kind of we know how high energy scattering looks on the bulk sheet, because high energy, when we scatter something on the bulk sheet at high energies, then the way you may think about bulk sheet is just interior of heavy quark meson. And we know what are the degrees of freedom at high energies in heavy quark meson. These are partons of perturbative QCD. So we consider scattering of two high energy partons. We know what happens. They go through each other. There will be hard collision. If we are really at high energies, not much happens. They go through each other. But because we're in a planar limit, they keep going. But now string stretches between them. And eventually, they will be turned back. So that's the cartoon which we expect to find. And it's interesting, as this cartoon shows, combining asymptotic freedom, which ensures that there is no particle, at least no hard particle production, and confinement, which ensures that there is a string, gives dynamical reason for integrability to emerge. So this theory cannot be free because there is a string stretches which turns them back. So usually integrable models arise, and we think about all the very tuned situations, they arise in very special circumstances. But here, when you think about high energy dynamics on the bulk sheet, there is a dynamical reason for integrability to emerge, and this dynamical reason is combination of these two ingredients which we have here. So in the rest of my talk, I will try to kind of put formulas behind this picture to be as concrete as possible in the simplest possible context also. So what I will talk about, I will go from four dimensions to two dimensions. So I will talk about two-dimensional QCD. But then I think about this question about bulk sheet dynamics, that's always a question about two-dimensional theories. In that sense, one may hope that going lower number dimensions, we don't lose that much, that lessons about bulk sheet dynamics learned in low dimensional theory will be universally applicable also at higher dimensions. So this is a model I will be considering. This model has a long history. I say a few words about it, but it's adjoint two-dimensional QCD. So I need to introduce some extra degrees of freedom to have some something to scatter, so that there are local degrees of freedom in the theory. And I will work in the regime when I expect the theory to be perturbative, namely when the quark mass is large compared to the Toff coupling. So, well, the first question I'm asked, okay, is there bulk sheet geometry to talk about in this case? Because here, dimensionality of target space is the same as dimensionality of the bulk sheet. And to define what bulk sheet theory is, let's step back and let's first remind how it is defined in D equal 4. And here I'm taking the perspective of a lattice theorist. I should say that one interesting aspect of this quantum gravity is we have experimental data about that, because in principle, everything can be measured about this theory on the computer. So that's a rare opportunity to get window into kind of experimental gravitational physics doing lattice QCD simulations. And the way lattice people explore dynamics on the bulk sheet, they look at the two-point function of Polyakov loops or other objects like that. So that shows that this loop doesn't have to be straight. You may deform it in the transverse direction, and that's how you produce perturbations on the bulk sheet. And then the usual way from this two-point correlator, one extracts energy excitations of states which live on the bulk sheet. Of course, when we go to theory in two dimensions, there are no transverse directions, so you cannot put wiggles on a string. So if I were talking about just two-dimensional Young Mills, then there are no local degrees of freedom. There are some, when you put theory on a circle, there are global degrees of freedom. And actually, pure Young Mills theory in two dimensions is interesting. Solved theory of non-critical strings, and kind of it shows that there is a different path to non-critical strings without adding this linear dilaton. There's nothing like that here. But it's a bit too minimalistic for my purposes, because I want to talk about scattering. I want to scatter something on the bulk sheet. But that's exactly what is achieved the moment I introduced adjoint matter. Now, instead of introducing this additional these wiggles on the bulk sheet, I may just insert fermions inside inside the Wilson loop. And what is called bulk sheet is just basically the sector of the theory created by single trace operators like that, which decouples from the rest of the theory in the planar limit, similarly how bulk sheet dynamics decouples from globals in Lagrange limit. So, and I should say there are lots of interesting work has been done on the theory, starting from early 90s, but the focus was mostly on the spectrum of hadrons in this theory, and Wolfschmidt dynamics wasn't really explored until recently. That will be my subject here. But all the machinery which you need to study this, it was developed again back in 70s. So really what I will do is a linear combination of like Sidney Coleman's paper on the abelian Schwinger model and Ed Witten's paper on theta vacuum and two-dimensional QCD. But basically it's Coleman's calculations with extra color indices sprinkled all over the place. And so the way one proceeds, so one sets up a Hamiltonian formalism on the Wolfschmidt. So here it's convenient, instead of putting zero in a circle, really introduced. I said that you may think about the Wolfschmidt as an interior of a heavy quark meson. So that's exactly what one does here. One introduced two non-dynamical heavy quarks at the kind of end of the world. But eventually they will be taken to infinity. So this is just a regulator for me. So these are fundamental quarks. Then one fixes a spatial gauge, solves for a zero using the Gauss's law constraint, and that gives rise to a Hamiltonian, just written now in terms of the only dynamical degrees of freedom which are there, the adjoint fermions. And there are several pieces here. Well, first there is a classical string tension, then there is a Coulomb force coming from the exchange of gluons between adjoint fermions. Well, there is an additional piece related to the presence of this quarks which I introduced. And one thing to emphasize here, so this T and T bar, these are operators which act in the color spaces which live in the for end of the world quarks. So these are, they're not C numbers, these are quantum mechanical operators, because when you take quark mass to infinity, you freeze its motion is overall, but the color degrees of freedom is still fluctuating. So the, in other words, the full Hilbert space where dynamics happens is a tensor product between free fermions living in the middle and fundamental anti-fundamental representations living at the endpoints. However, the physical states, because of the confinement, these are states which are annihilated by color operators. There are various ways to see that. That's the right thing to impose. Basically, well, you want energy to be finite. That's and confinement is classical phenomenon here. But that's a very interesting, that's a very important condition, which makes, in some sense, it's crucial for getting dynamical geometry here, because, well, that was a theme of many talks before. Dynamical geometry comes as a result of entanglement. And here, this entanglement is enforced by requiring that we talk about color singlet states. So, just as a technical remark, in the formulas which I will write later, it's convenient to think about this tensor product V bar times V as operators acting on the fundamental, just to make formulas shorter and to avoid writing indices. So now in the heavy mass limit, states are well characterized by the number of partons which are present inside the string. So we can go ahead and study them. So for instance, the vacuum, to a good approximation, would be a state with no fermion excitations inside. So it's just a color singlet state of these two end-of-the-world quarks. Then there is a one-particle state, which in that paper from 79 by Ed was called free quark. Well, because it looks like, so it describes, it's again a color singlet state like that using this terminology which I introduced. And pictorially, it does look like a quark which may propagate anywhere along the line. So it's not confined, that's why it was called free. But of course, also it doesn't carry anymore any color index. Its color was being screened by end of the world charges. But what I want to do, I want to study scattering. So that's for that I need to go to two-particle states. And there are two kinds of states. First, there are two-particle states, which color singlets, which can be described like that. And these are states, they correspond just taking a vacuum and on top of that adding a meson. So these are exactly the states which I'm not interested in. These are the states which decouple from the Wolfschmidt dynamics in the planar limit. The Wolfschmidt theory, what I have states like that, which can be correspond to color singlet operators, color singlet states written here. They look like normal conventional two-particle states, but there is a catch here. After thinking a little bit, one realizes that there are too many states here for a pair of identical particles, because these two momenta, because of color ordering, these two momenta take value on the real on the full plane, right? But for identical particles, one expects momentum to take value the half plane. There is a like center of mass motion and relative momentum. Another way to see it is to calculate scalar product between the states, and the exchange term is missing in this inner scalar product. So the scalar product just looks at the scalar product of distinguishable particles. And of course, you can go ahead and construct n particle states, and you find the story repeats. So the bullshit states, they correspond to states like this, and the scalar product corresponds to what's sometimes called infinite Boltzmann statistics. But basically, it's a when you go to n particle subsector, you find n distinguishable particles in this theory, which is a bit unconventional. That's not what used to you if you open Weinberg's textbook. He will tell you whenever you do relativistic theory, you end up working in the Fock space, and that's not the situation here. And there is a clear physical reason behind it, so it's not a conventional Fock space. What we need to do, we need to have explicit expression for the Hamiltonian, which I had. So basically, we need to learn how to do perturbation theory in this space. But so far, I was doing kinematics for you. I was just describing what are the color singlet states, what are physical states which I have in this theory. So let's now start doing dynamics. And for that, let's calculate Hamiltonian. In principle, there is an explicit expression for the full Hamiltonian. Let's look at the two-particle part of it. And what one finds is the following. So, well, that's the two-particle Hamiltonian. There's a free part, and then there is a term here, this function u, it's smooth function, which, you know, of momenta, which actually equal to one almost in all regimes, apart from both k and k prime of order the string tension. So it can be approximated to one, but then there are some pieces which are singular, but they have a more transparent meaning in the position space. So if we set u to one and go to the position space, we find that this term here corresponds to a potential which has this shape. So we see, well, that's confinement. But we see that the result of this IR divergent piece is a result of the confinement. Actually, when we go to on-shell states, when we look at on-shell states, the conventional statistics gets restored. So this extra states which appear due to color ordering when we describe off-shell dynamics, because potential indefinitely grows on one of the sides, the number of asymptotic scattering states is the same. So the S matrix in the theory will live in conventional Fock space, so Weinberg is right there. But to talk about off-shell dynamics, we need to talk about this unconventional Hilbert space, which is not the usual Fock space. There are, I think, lots of things can be said about the system. So clearly, there will be, when you consider scattering this potential, you'll find that there is a time delay growing with energy. So actually, classically, it is clear that there will be phase shift, the famous e to the s phase shift, shockwave phase shift. And what's interesting about the system, that we see that it's a different way to get a long time delay without having a resonance. So what happens here, because it's a system of two identical particles, the kind of wave function doesn't live on the half line. It lives on the full line with growing potential. So during scattering, what you get a kind of, there's a pocket of space which opens up as a result of scattering. And the size of this pocket of space proportional to the collision energy. And that's the mechanism which gives rise to the time delay. But on the other hand, in this potential, nowhere you find signs of resonances. And well, of course, coming back to the beginning of my talk, what I will try to argue, well, that in the gravitational way to thinking about the system, that's a black hole. So that's what you expect when you do scattering in gravitational theory at high energies. So kind of we see that this came back to this picture, so that that picture corresponds to scattering of this potential, and also we see that the possibility of zigzags, even though I don't have transverse direction, so it doesn't look like I have much of geometry present, but the possibility to strings to fold and form zigzags actually restores much of the dynamics which we expected to find in high dimensions. So much of, like, the important part of geometric description is present here. So now the program would be to look at the full Hamiltonian, identify free part, solve free part, and then do perturbation theory in this unusual Hilbert space. So we're not there yet, but so at least think we have a good candidate for the free Hamiltonian. So if you take essentially what one does, one looks at the full Hamiltonian and extracts this IR singular pieces, which correspond to in position space, that correspond to growing potential, and it's one sees that these pieces they always preserve particle number. So this Hamiltonian, which one gets by taking this limit, it looks like this. So it's there is a free Hamiltonian plus like pairwise interactions between closest neighbors of this form, which is the potential which I drawn before. And well, very closely related systems were discussed in the 70s. Things and appeared under the name of folded strings. This system is Poincaré invariant at the level of classical Poisson brackets, and moreover, it's integrable in the massless limit. So that's what makes it a good candidate for zero-order Hamiltonian. So let me say a few words about this integrability. Nice thing about having simple models, then you can do everything very explicitly. So let me go through this. I think it's a cute exercise. And let me emphasize the following. So when we discuss, like, for instance, I talk about black holes, it was emphasized by many people here. Well, many aspects of black hole physics may be captured by talking about finite dimensional systems. But on the other hand, I personally feel that I would be fully confident that kind of I understand black holes if I talk about a system which does have relativistic causality in it. And this is a very rare opportunity, a system like this, a very rare opportunity to talk about finite dimensional system with full Lorentz invariance presence, because this system doesn't, the system like that, they don't appear in higher dimensions, but in one plus one dimension, it's possible to have them. And not only it's a relativistic system, but also it's actually a gravitational system. So yeah, this is a theory which I was talking about. We talked about a zigzag model, so it's a massless limit of the theory which I wrote before. And I promise to you, from now on, I will be just doing classical mechanics, but I think it's still amusing exercise. So there's expression for momentum and boost operator. So it's a level of Poisson brackets. There is one plus one dimensional Poincaré algebra here. Just to show you that the system is integral, that's how scattering looks like. So that's you can do it on Mathematica and you find the momenta initial and final. So particles do the zigzags as they go through each other, and the momenta get preserved. But actually, it's fun to prove it. And the structures, I think, which appear are quite interesting. So to prove it, one proceeds as the following. So it's useful to treat all positions and momenta on equal footings to write the strings of variables, which are just momenta and coordinate difference of neighboring particles. Associated to this, there is a classical like bit system, just the signs of these variables. And in this, these notations, the equation of motion takes this very simple form. Now, first observation that there is a simple, like if you look at this field equation, this equation of motion, there is a natural topological invariant, which actually is the Ising Hamiltonian of this string of bits. And its meaning, in the asymptotic regions, it reduces to difference between left and right movers. And in between, during the scattering process, it also counts the difference between left and right movers, where left and right is defined with respect to the wall sheet. And you drop the particles at the edges. Now, then there is, because here dynamics is piecewise linear in time, so it's natural to look for dynamical charges, which also linear combinations, piecewise linear combinations of these Q variables, which are momenta and coordinates. And so one writes the following ansatz, then it's easy to see that actually these functions F, they should be defined at the partial Ising Hamiltonians, which are like number of defects in this spin, in this chain, and then kind of at the end of the day, you get some recursion relation for this coefficient functions, which can be solved. I don't have time to explain how it goes, but what is shown here is the plane. This is the A is a label of these Q variables, and TA is a value of the corresponding number of defects. Actually, it's amusing that in this plane, in these variables, the string evolution looks like some kind of crystal melting dynamics. It's all purely classical, but I think the system is called to be quantized. That produces 2n minus 2 translation invariant charges. Then one construct another one. And so it's a maximally superintegrable system. And then, as usual for systems like that, from the algebra of charges, one may find timed classical time delays. These classical time delays, as expected, they reproduce the e to the s phase shift, which corresponds, so the system corresponds to n particle subsector of TT bar deformed massless fermion. Let me skip that. But this was a classical analysis. However, this results in classical time delay, as I said, it coincides with that of a known one-loop exact integrable quantum model. So, which is, TT bar deformed massless fermion or massless fermion coupled to flat space JT gravity. So I think that strongly suggests that there should be quantization of this model, which is preserves integrability and Lorentz symmetry. And that leads to, I think, hopefully there is lots of discussion in this TT bar deformation story. What are the off-shell observables for this series and where there are any? So here there is an actual Hilbert space which describes off-shell dynamics, but it's just not conventional Fock space. So I think that shows their route how to build these observables. It wouldn't be conventional local observables. They won't be kind of correlators in conventional Fock space, but shutting up. There will be observables in this infinite statistic Hilbert space. So this is just the very last slide. So we see that this wet space JT gravity theory arises in integrable UV asymptotics on the ball sheet. Because it's interesting to see what would be the full non-integrable gravitational theory describing dynamics here. As I said, that's only approximation there. True theory, there is particle production in the full theory. Well, and more generally, one expects to find a map in two dimensions. Actually, Young-Mills theory is just one representative for larger family of theories. So instead of, you can introduce adjoint scalar and write kinetic term for gauge field in this case, where V is phi squared, that reduces to usual F mu squared. But in principle, there is a larger class of series like that. And so it's natural to expect that when one goes to Wolfschmidt of this series, then I will be getting different dilaton gravities. And I think it will be very interesting to work out exact map between these gauge theories and the resulting dilaton gravities. Okay, thank you.
Okay, do we have some questions?
Towards the end, you mentioned again the TT bar deformed fermion. So that's a single fermion or it has flavor symmetry? Your theory, the TT bar deformed fermion theory?
Sorry, the
TT bar deformed fermion theory.
Yes.
Does it have, it's a single fermion?
Yeah, single fermion, yeah.
If you have a Majorana fermion, which is basically the 2D Ising model, then the TT bar deformation famously at least corresponds to the tricutical Ising model, which also has a lattice formulation. So in this, what you're describing here is basically a lattice formulation of a TT bar deformed theory, and then the TT bar language appears
I'm not sure what you mean by TT bar deformation of Ising model. Well, it is a theory of Goldsteiner. It does have non-linearized.
Right, but basically it arises indeed if you come from tricutical Ising. The way you approach.
No, it's not exactly TT bar. It's only in IR limit when there is a RG flow from tricutical Ising to Ising, which is described by rational CD factor, which Steve worked on many years ago. But and if you go in the IR, that RG flow becomes just because TT bar is a leading irrelevant operator, that RG flow becomes the same as TT bar flow. But in the UV, these are very different flows.
I understand they're different, but still there's a correction to the free field, the free Majorana description of the Ising model that looks similar to your your interaction that you have here. And I was just wondering if indeed there's a, if you can write down the interaction in terms of the free fermions.
Well, that theory, yeah, TT bar deformed fermion is a quantization of Galstina. So in that sense, it is a theory of interacting Meyer and fermion. That's right, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm because you basically seem to be working with something that's initially discretized, at least from the point of view of the
well, here discretization comes from restricting to n particle subsector. But indeed, I hope that this right, like I'm doing classical here, but still I hope that the emergence of this Ising model, which natural appearance in the Ising model, is probably related to what you're saying. Yeah, but I don't know the details of that yet.
One text?
Yeah, so when you consider the quantization of the theory, right?
Yeah.
So Toft described how to quantize the case when you have mesons and in the fundamental, when you have particles in the fundamental, and by going to the Lycon, by going to a Lycon gauge. I was wondering whether the same technique might apply for
yeah,
the situation, and whether
so
you've done it.
Exactly. If you look at the two-particle subsector of this theory, that's very close. That's almost the same as Toft model. The Toft model had potential like this, and we have a potential like that. But I think it's a bit subtle. First. Yeah, because going to the light cone regime of potential where there is a free region is more subtle. So we can this, but also, yeah, but it's closely, definitely, it's closely related to the Toft model. Two particle subsector of this the series, essentially, it's almost the same as Toft model, but with confining potential being just one half and right.
Yeah, could you just state again what was happening at the ends of the, is it an infinite string, or it looked like in the diagram you had particles at two ends.
Yeah, but these are a regulator. So then, when I talk about scattering, I take them to infinity, and that's how
okay,
I scattering arises. Yes.
So you probably explained this, and I lost track of it. But in this model, is there supposed to be adjoint matter or not? And if so, kind of, what is its role from this kind of world sheet point of view?
No, there are no, like at the end of among physical degrees of freedom, there is no physical adjoint matter, but there are like the single degree of freedom, which is quark, which is a remnant of the adjoint matter present in the gauge theory, and its color gets screened by the string, or kind of, but I think that's what I was trying to say. The color got lost when we impose that we look at the color singlet states.
That's right. This is supposed to be I thought this was supposed to be a model for 4D QCD with adjoint quarks.
No, this is 2D QCD with adjoint quarks.
I thought that was the world sheet.
I made my life as simple as possible.
Okay, sorry.
So that was a 2D QCD with adjoint fermion, and
yes.
Then I went to the world sheet of that theory, which corresponds to restriction to single trace subsector. Just produced with Wilson line with the fermion insertions inside, right?
I see. I thought going to higher dimensions shouldn't matter too much since the string is basically two dimensional.
Yeah, that was my reason to go to two dimensions because here it's easier to do calculations, right? But the question is always about two dimensional theory, right?
Other questions in the audience? Then I'll ask just one before we go. On your previous slide, you mentioned a connection with JT gravity with a couple of the fermions. And you talked about the classical time delay you'd found before coinciding with that in this JT gravity theory.
Right.
I'm not very familiar with this theory. Why is there a sizable time delay in collisions in this JT gravity theory in flat space?
Well, first of all, this is JT. Well, JT gravity is a bit misnomer, but really, what's written here is the first order formulation for the theory. Its second order formulation, usually with metric formulation, that's kind of what one call flat space JT gravity, meaning that lambda is set to zero, but it is a JT gravity. And yeah, that theory has. The exact S matrix for that theory it's given by this, and there are various ways to get it. Well, for instance, you, like if you start with JT gravity and what people here we mean by JT gravity in ADS space. For instance, you can get this phase shift by taking flat space limit of Schwarz and dressing, and that reproduces this S matrix in the flat space limit. But there are many other ways to derive this phase shift. So yeah, that's the exact S matrix for that zero gravity.
Well, thank you, Sergei.